This excerpt is from my first book, Catching Homelessness, A Nurse's Story of Falling Through the Safety Net, which was published in 2016. It's from the opening of the book. A few years ago, while working with Public Health, Seattle and King County, on a medical respite project for homeless youth, my own homeless shadow resurfaced. I was in downtown Seattle at the YWCA Women's Shelter, waiting inside the front lobby for the rest of our group to arrive. We were scheduled to have a tour of the facility to see how they ran their medical respite program. I'd taken the city bus and had purposefully dressed down in jeans, a sweater, and a raincoat. It was late afternoon, raining outside, and I saw drug dealing happening on the sidewalk in front of the shelter. The members of my medical respite group were buzzed in the front door. At the same time, a homeless woman resident walked up to me and asked, "Did you stay at a hotel last night on Aurora instead of here again?" Aurora Avenue is one of Seattle's main prostitution areas. I looked up at her in alarm. "I'm sorry, you must have me mixed up with someone else. I'm not staying here, I'm just visiting." The people in my group overheard this interchange. Later, they teased me about it, saying how preposterous it was. I was a university professor, for God's sake. There was no way I could be homeless, much less a homeless prostitute. But I couldn't shake the feeling that my cover had been blown, that I'd been found out, that my homeless shadow was showing. You are homeless. Why? What was wrong with you? Those are the questions people ask me, or want to ask me, whenever they discover I was homeless. Coming out of the closet about my own homelessness was never an option for me. It could derail my career, hurt my family, and marginalize me even more. It was largely why I had moved across the country to Seattle to escape the memories of having been homeless in my hometown of Richmond, Virginia. But standing there in the YWCA shelter, I recognized the irony and the hypocrisy embedded in my reaction to the woman's question. Here I was, an outspoken advocate for people who were homeless, while secretly judging them and, by extension, judging myself. Homelessness is exhausting and soul-sucking. Homelessness has marked me. Like the star-shaped surgery scars on my belly, the body harbors secrets. Homelessness is a type of deep illness, a term coined by sociologist Arthur Frank for an illness that leaves you feeling dislocated, an illness that casts a shadow over your life. That shadow never completely goes away. At some point, it was time to acknowledge my homeless shadow, time to remember. This excerpt is from my second book, Soul Stories, Voices on the Margins. It came out in 2018 from the University of California Medical Humanities Press. This excerpt is from the essay, Walk in My Shoes. On a cold, wet, blustery February afternoon, I sat observing shoe-buying rituals in the women's shoe section of the upscale Nordstrom store in downtown Seattle. I had spent the morning at a nearby women's homeless shelter as a nurse helping a group of 10 medical and nursing students do foot care. Women soaked their feet in plastic dishpans of oatmeal-soaked water, while students sat on stools below them and washed their feet. Providing something as intimate as foot care brings out stories in people. I encourage the students to listen, to be able to hear, and perhaps to bear witness to the stories of homeless and marginalized people. It was the red sneakers Essie was wearing that drew me to her at the women's shelter earlier that day. That was the second time in the past several months I had run into Essie at one of our foot care clinics. She wore an orange polyester shirt with a green chiffon scarf tied around her dreadlocks, a pink pleated skirt down to her ankles, and the red sneakers. She told me she only dressed in bright Caribbean colors. They keep me happy. I can't be all down in the dumps when I got these colors on. Essie had a perpetual and slightly crooked smile, the crookedness perhaps the residue of a stroke. The women's shelter is located in a church basement in downtown Seattle, near the main shopping district. It's a day shelter, a safe zone for women and children that serves homeless and marginalized near homeless women, especially women dealing with domestic violence. The shelter has multiple case managers, social workers, and volunteer nurses who try to connect women with health, housing, and social services. The shelter workers lend the women a hand, bend an ear to hear their problems, offer a leg up the socioeconomic ladder, a toehold on life. Empathy is their main tool. Empathy is what we try to cultivate in our students. Empathy is feeling with, as opposed to feeling for, which happens with an arm's length sympathy. Walking in another person's shoes is how empathy is most often described. But can we ever walk in another person's shoes? And is it always a good thing to try? Whenever I work with students in foot clinics, I remind them that we tend to be more empathetic towards people that we know, people similar to us, that climbing the socioeconomic ladder often diminishes empathy, and that experiencing our own traumas can make us more empathetic to people who have experienced similar traumas. But being a wounded healer can also cause us to have more porous boundaries, which puts us at risk of losing our sense of self, our balance. I seldom am privy to the individual traumas of my students. I don't need to know this information, but I do need to know that they have access to the resources that help them process in positive ways triggering events they may encounter. Participating in shelter-based foot clinics takes them out of the comforting, familiar walls of the hospital into more disturbing territory. This excerpt is from the opening chapter called Brother's Keeper from my book titled Skid Road on the Frontier of Health and Homelessness in an American City, which came out from Johns Hopkins University Press in 2021. Sleet slashed horizontally across the beach and crusted piles of seaweed, kelp, and driftwood on the high tide line. It worried its way through the flaps of a tattered canvas tent nestled between charred tree stumps and on to the muddy, rag-wrapped feet of the shivering man lying inside. Wood smoke, mixed with the salt of the inland sea, fir sap, and rotting shellfish, accompanied the hard wind. Late December 1854 in Seattle was relentlessly cold and wet. The man's tent was the only such structure on this stretch of shoreline along the northern edge of the pioneer settlement. The land had been newly claimed by William Bell, but was known to both white settlers and indigenous people by its Coast Salish name, Babequab, Little Prairie, which referred to its stretches of low-growing, berry-producing salal. Piles of clamshells surrounded cedar longhouses built by the native people. The beach here was rich with butter clams and had long served as an indigenous seafood processing area. The tent dweller was Edward Moore, a 32-year-old sailor from Worcester County, Massachusetts, who had stayed behind in Seattle or was left behind by his ship's captain. Perhaps he drank too much, even by drunken sailor standards, although there's no record of that. What is known is that he'd been living in his makeshift tent for months, living off raw shellfish he foraged and being cared for after a fashion by the Coast Salish people who lived nearby. Soon after this December day, Edward Moore was deemed by the white pioneer leaders of Seattle to be insane and incapable of taking care of himself. They likely found him in his tent, unable to walk, and carried him along the frozen, muddy beach at low tide to the town's one rooming house. There was no hospital. Upon unwrapping the rags covering Moore's feet, it was discovered that he had severe frostbite. The town's first doctor, David Swenson Maynard, promptly amputated most of Moore's toes with an axe. This was, after all, a frontier logging town where medical care was scarce and sharp axes were plentiful. Doc Maynard may have sterilized the axe with a whiskey he was fond of drinking. Moore survived this primitive surgery and was cared for by Doc Maynard, Maynard's second wife and Seattle's first nurse, Catherine, and the German immigrant innkeeper, David Maurer. Edward Moore was King County's first official homeless person. What became of Moore, how the residents and leaders of the nascent town of Seattle dealt with him, and the poignant story of his final days echo lessons and dilemmas that are with us still.